The Blue Castle by Lucy Maud Montgomery, read by Amy Zook from Grandma's Bookshelf. Chapter 8. Valancy did not sleep that night. She lay awake all through the long, dark hours, thinking. She made a discovery that surprised her. She had been afraid of almost anything in life, was not afraid of death. It did not seem in the least terrible to her, and she need not now be afraid of anything else. Why had she been afraid of things? Because of life. Afraid of Uncle Benjamin because of the menace of poverty and old age. But now she would never be old, neglected, tolerated. Afraid of being an old maid all her life. But now she would not be an old maid very long. Afraid of offending her mother and her clan because she had to live with and among them and couldn't live peaceably if she didn't give in to them. But now she hadn't. Valancy felt a curious freedom. But she was still horribly afraid of one thing. The fuss the whole jamfrey of them would make when she told them. Valancy shuddered at the thought of it. She couldn't endure it. Oh, she knew so well how it would be. First there would be indignation. Yes, indignation on the part of Uncle James because she had gone to a doctor. Any doctor without consulting him. Indignation on the part of her mother for being so sly and deceitful. Dear own mother, Doss. Indignation on the part of the whole clan because she had not gone to Dr. Marsh. Then would come the solicitude. She would be taken to Dr. Marsh, and when Dr. Marsh confirmed Dr. Trent's diagnosis, she would be taken to specialists in Toronto and Montreal. Uncle Benjamin would foot the bill with a splendid gesture of magnificence in thus assisting the widow and orphan, and talk forever after of the shocking fee specialists charge for looking wise and saying they can't do anything. And when the specialists could do nothing for her, Uncle James would insist on her taking purple pills. I've known them to effect a cure when all the doctors had given up. And her mother would insist on Redfern's blood bitters, and Cousin Stickles would insist on rubbing her over her heart every night with Redfern's liniment on the ground that it might do good and couldn't do harm. And everybody else would have some pet dope for her to take. Dr. Stalling would come to her and say solemnly, "You are very ill. Are you prepared for what might be before you?" Almost as if he was going to shake his forefinger at her, the forefinger that had not grown any shorter or less knobby with age. And she would be watched and checked like a baby and never let do anything or go anywhere alone. Perhaps she wouldn't even be allowed to sleep alone unless she must die in her sleep. Cousin Stickles and her mother would insist on sharing her room and bed. Yes, undoubtedly they would. It was this last thought that really decided Valancy. She could not put up with it, and she wouldn't. As the clock in the hall below struck 12, Valancy suddenly and defiantly made up her mind that she would not tell anybody. She had always been told, ever since she could remember, that she must hide her feelings. "It is not ladylike to have feelings," Cousin Stickles had once told her disapprovingly. Well, she would hide them with a vengeance. But though she was not afraid of death, she was not indifferent to it. She found that she resented it. It was not fair that she should have to die when she had never lived. Rebellion flamed up in her soul as the dark hours passed by. Not because she had no future, but because she had no past. "I'm poor, I'm ugly, I'm a failure, and I'm near death," she thought. She could see her own obituary notice in the Deerwood Weekly Times copied into the Port Lawrence Journal. "A deep gloom was cast over Deerwood, etc., etc., leaving a large family circle of friends to mourn, etc., etc., etc." Lies, all lies. Gloom, forsooth. No one would miss her. Her death would not matter a straw to anybody. Not even her mother loved her. Her mother, who had been so disappointed that she was not a boy, or at least a pretty girl. Valancy reviewed her whole life between midnight and the early spring dawn. It was a very drab existence, but here and there an incident loomed out with significance of all proportion to its real importance. These incidents were all unpleasant in one way or another. Nothing really pleasant had ever happened to Valancy. "I've never had one wholly happy hour in my life. Not one," she thought. just been a colorless non-entity. I remember reading somewhere once that there was an hour in which a woman might be happy all her life if she could but find it. I've never found my hour. Never, never. And I never will now. If I could only have had that hour, I'd be willing to die. Those significant incidents kept bobbing up in her mind, like unbidden ghosts, without any sequence of time or place. For instance, that time when at 16 she had blued a tubful of clothes too deeply. And the time when, at 8, she had stolen some raspberry jam from Aunt Wellington's pantry. Valancy never heard the last of those two misdemeanors. At almost every clan gathering, they raked up against her as jokes. Uncle Benjamin hardly ever missed retelling the raspberry jam incident. He had been the one to catch her, her face all streaked and stained. I've really done so few bad things that they have to keep harping on the old ones, thought Valancy. Why, I've never even had a quarrel with anybody. I haven't an enemy. What a spineless thing I must be to not even have one enemy. There was that incident of the dust pile at school when she was 7. Valancy always recalled it when Dr. Sterling referred to the text, "To him that hath shall be given, and from him that hath not shall be taken even that which he hath." Other people might puzzle over that text, but it never puzzled Valancy. The whole relationship between herself and Olive, dating from that day of the dust pile, was a commentary on it. She had been going to school a year, but Olive, who was a year younger, had just begun, and had about her all the glamour of a new girl, and an exceeding pretty one at that. It was at recess, and all the girls, big and little, were out on the road in front of the school, making dust piles. The aim of each girl was to have the biggest pile. Valancy was good at making dust piles. There was an art in it, and she had secret hopes of leading. But Olive, working off by herself, was suddenly discovered to have a larger dust pile than anybody else. Valancy felt no jealousy. Her dust pile was quite big enough to please her. And then one of the older girls had an inspiration. "Let's put all our dust on Olive's pile and make a tremendous one," she exclaimed. A frenzy seemed to seize the girls. They swooped down on the dust piles with pails and shovels, and in a few seconds Olive's pile was a veritable pyramid. In vain, Valancy, with scrawny, outstretched little arms, tried to protect hers. She was ruthlessly swept aside, her dust pile scooped up and poured on Olive's. Valancy turned away resolutely and began building another dust pile. Again, a bigger girl pounced on it. Valancy stood before it, flushed, indignant, arms outspread. "Don't take it," she pleaded. "Please don't take it." "But why?" demanded the older girl. "Why won't you help to make Olive's bigger?"
"I want my own little dust pile," said Valancy piteously.
Her plea went unheeded. While she argued with one girl, another scraped up her dust pile. Valancy turned away, her heart swelling, her eyes full of tears.
"Jealous, you're jealous," said the girls mockingly.
"You are very selfish," said her mother coldly, when Valancy told her about it at night. That was the first and last time Valancy had ever taken any of her troubles to her mother. Valancy was neither jealous nor selfish. It was only that she wanted a dust pile of her own. Small or big mattered not. A team of horses came down the street. Olive's dust pile was scattered over the roadway. The bell rang. The girls trooped into the school and had forgotten the whole affair before they reached their seats. Valancy never forgot it. To this day, she resented it in her secret soul. But was it not symbolic of her life? "I've never been able to have my own dust pile," thought Valancy. The enormous red moon she had seen rising right at the end of the street one autumn evening of her 6th year. She had been sick and cold with the awful, uncanny horror of it. So near to her, so big. She had run in trembling to her mother, and her mother had laughed at her. She had gone to bed and hidden her face under the clothes in terror, lest she might look at the window and see that horrible moon glaring in at her through it. The boy who had tried to kiss her at a party when she was 15. She had not let him. She had evaded him and run. He was the only boy who had ever tried to kiss her. Now, 14 years later, Valancy found herself wishing that she had let him. The time she had been made to apologize to Olive for something she hadn't done.
Olive had said that Valancy had pushed her into the mud and spoiled her new shoes on purpose. Valancy knew she hadn't. It had been an accident. And even that wasn't her fault. But nobody would believe her. She had to apologize and kiss Olive to make up. The injustice of it burned in her soul tonight. That summer when Olive had the most beautiful hat, trimmed with creamy yellow net, with a wreath of red roses and a little ribbon bows under the chin. Valancy had wanted a hat like that more than she had wanted anything. She pleaded for one and had been laughed at. All summer she had to wear a horrible little brown sailor with elastic that cut behind her ears. None of the girls would go around with her because she was so shabby. Nobody but Olive. People thought Olive so sweet and unselfish. It was an excellent foil for her, thought Valancy. Even then she knew that. Valancy had tried to win a prize for attendance in Sunday school once. But Olive won it. There were so many Sundays Valancy had to stay home because she had colds. She had once tried to say a piece in school once Friday afternoon and had broken down in it. Valancy was a good reciter and never got stuck. That night she had spent in Fort Lawrence with Aunt Isabel when she was 10. Byron Sterling was there, from Montreal, 12 years old, conceited clever. At family prayers in the morning, Byron had reached across and given Valancy's thin arm such a savage pinch that she screamed out with pain. After prayers were over, she was summoned to Aunt Isabel's bar of judgment, but when she said Byron had pinched her, Byron denied it. He said she cried out because the kitten scratched her. He said she had put the kitten up on her chair and was playing with it when she should have been listening to Uncle David's prayer, and he was believed. In the Sterling clan, the boys were always believed before the girls. Valancy was sent home in disgrace because of her exceeding bad behavior during family prayers, and she was not asked to Aunt Isabel's again for many moons. The time cousin Betty Sterling was married. Somehow, Valancy got wind of the fact that Betty was going to ask her to be one of the bridesmaids. Valancy was secretly uplifted. It would have been a delightful thing to be a bridesmaid. And of course, she would have a new dress for it. A pretty new dress, a pink dress. Betty wanted her bridesmaids to dress in pink. But Betty had never asked her after all. Valancy couldn't guess why, but long after her secret tears of disappointment had dried, Olive had told her. Betty, after much consideration and consultation and reflection, had decided that Valancy was too insignificant. She would spoil the effect. That was 9 years ago. But tonight, Valancy caught her breath with the old pain and the sting of it. That day on her 11th year, when her mother had badgered her into confessing something she had never done. Valancy had denied it for a long time, but eventually, for peace's sake, she had given in and pled guilty. Mrs. Frederick had always made people lie by pushing them into situations where they had to lie. Then her mother had made her kneel down on the parlor floor between herself and Cousin Stickles and say, "Oh God, please forgive me for not speaking the truth." Valancy had said it, but as she rose from her knees, she muttered, "But oh God, you know I did speak the truth." Valancy had not heard of Galileo, but her fate was similar to his. She was punished just as severely as if she hadn't confessed and prayed. The winter she went to dancing school. Uncle James had decreed she should go and had paid for her lessons. How she'd looked forward to it. And how she hated it. She had never had a voluntary partner. The teacher always had to tell some boy to dance with her, and generally he'd been sulky about it. Yet Valancy was a good dancer, as light on her feet as thistledown. Olive, who never lacked eager partners, was heavy. The affair of the button string when she was 10. All the girls in school had button strings. Olive had a very long one with many, great many beautiful buttons. Valancy had one. Most of the buttons on it were very commonplace. But she had six beauties that had come off of Grandmother Sterling's wedding gown, sparkling buttons of gold and glass, much more beautiful than any Olive had. Their possession conferred a certain distinction on Valancy. She knew every little girl in school envied her the exclusive possession of those beautiful buttons. When Olive saw them on the button string, she had looked at them narrowly, but said nothing. Then, the next day, Aunt Wellington had to come to Elm Street and told Mrs. Frederick that she thought Valancy should have some of those buttons. Grandmother Sterling was just as much Wellington's mother as Frederick's.
Mrs. Frederick had agreed, amiably. She could not afford to fall out with Aunt Wellington. Moreover, the matter was of no importance whatsoever. Aunt Wellington carried off 4 of the buttons, generously leaving 2 for Valancy. Valancy had torn these from her string and flung them to the floor. She had not yet learned that it was unladylike to have feelings, and had been sent supperless to bed for the exhibition. The night of Margaret Blunt's party. See, she had made such pathetic efforts to be pretty that night. Rob Walker was to be there, and 2 nights before, on a moonlit veranda at Uncle Herbert's cottage, Rob had really seemed attracted to her. At Margaret's party, Rob never even asked her to dance. He didn't notice her at all. She was a wallflower, as usual. That, of course, was years ago. People in Deerwood had long since given up inviting Valancy to dances. But to Valancy, its humiliation and disappointment were of the other day. Her face burned in the dark as she recalled herself sitting there in her pitifully crimped thin hair and the cheeks that she had pinched for an hour before coming in an attempt to make them red. All that came of it was a wild story that Valancy Sterling had worn makeup to Margaret Blunt's party. In those days in Deerwood, that was enough to wreck your character forever. It did not wreck Valancy's, or even damage it. People knew she couldn't be fast if she tried. They only laughed at her. I've had nothing but a second-hand existence, decided Valancy. All the great emotions of life have passed me by. I've never even had a grief. And have I ever really loved anybody? Do I really love Mother? No, I don't. That's the truth, whether it's disgraceful or not. I don't love her. I've never loved her. What's worse, I don't even like her. So, I don't know anything about any kind of love. My life has been empty. Empty. Nothing is worse than emptiness. Nothing. Valancy ejaculated the last nothing aloud, passionately. Then she moaned and stopped thinking about anything for a while. One of her attacks of pain had come on. When it was over, something had happened to Valancy. Perhaps the culmination of the process that had been going on in her mind ever since she had read Dr. Trent's letter. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, the wisest and most accursed hour of the clock, but sometimes it sets us free. I've been trying to please other people all my life, and failed, she said. After this, I shall please myself. I shall never pretend anything again. I've breathed an atmosphere of fibs and pretenses and evasions all my life. What a luxury it will be to tell the truth. I may not be able to do much that I want to do, but I won't do another thing I don't want to do. Mother can pout for weeks. I shan't worry over it. Despair is a free man. Hope is a slave. Valancy got up and dressed, with a deepening of that curious sense of freedom. When she had finished with her hair, she opened the window and hurled the jar of potpourri over into the next lot. It smashed gloriously against the schoolgirl complexion on the old carriage shop. I'm sick of the fragrance of dead things, said Valancy.